Donald Trump's about to get impeached. Oh,
Donald Trump's
come on, put your hands together. All you got to do is
ring the bell.
Oh,
and you can take Trump.
Oh, no.
Donald Trump's about to get impeached.
Tell them what they need to do.
Impeach him, Donald.
You got to
impeach him, Donald.
We need to
impeach him, Donald.
We all need to
impeach him, Donald.
Tell you what else you can do.
And you can take Pence.
You can get out too.
He can get out too.
You can take Mike Pence.
And you can take Pence.
He can get out too.
He can get out too.
You can take Paul Thomas.
And you can take Pence.
Do nothing anyway.
He can get out too.
Wow, we all did.
And you can take Pence.
Paul Thomas.
He can get out too.
Tell you what you need to do.
Welcome to the Holy Sh*t Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy sh*t. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist Patsy Zarilla and Attorney Frank Natel Esquire.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast, episode number 46 for October 30th, 2019. I am your co-host, Patsy Zarilla.
And I'm your co-host, Frank Natel.
And Frank, we got a lot to talk about today, but before we get into it and get knee-deep into this, just real quick, how's your week since last time we got together?
It's been great, Patsy. Thank you for asking. How about yours?
Oh, I could not complain. We had a great weekend, of testing. You'd have been proud. You had your boy's birthday, so congratulations to him, finally hitting double digits. And just been a great week, and I can't wait to jump into what we got to talk about.
I can't wait either, but congratulations to the folks at the class and the Dojang. That makes me proud that we have people who are aspiring and working towards those goals and meeting those goals. That's great to be a part of that and supporting this great group of people. So, and your teaching is wonderful. So I love to hear that. And also, yeah, it's a bittersweet thing. It's fun to go to the birthday parties and hold them for your kids. And it's fun to see them reach those milestones, but it's also, oh man, my little guy's not such a little guy anymore. He's 10 now, but it's always good too. You know, you just got to keep progressing, right?
Well, you get it in while you can, because pretty soon, you know how it is, right? You know how it is. Pretty soon, they just don't want that little bit of innocence or whatever kind of goes away, and you're stuck with a young adult.
Yep.
That happens too fast. Anyhow, this past weekend, I want to say, was it Friday night or Saturday night? ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. How about that, huh? Not bad for a non-Italian.
That's great pronunciation.
Yeah, not too bad. Don't ask me to do it again. we got him, okay? To say the least, we assassinated him. Basically, we went in and pulled a great military strike. So, you know, hats off and congrats to all of our folks.
That was the Delta team, wasn't it?
That was the Delta team. So it wasn't even the SEALs. You know, the SEALs got Bin Laden and the Deltas got al-Baghdadi. So, you know, we're militarily speaking, we're equal opportunity, I guess.
Yeah.
But just a fantastic job. You know, I always said we have the best military special forces in the world. And you know what? Damn it, we do. There's no doubt of that. Unfortunately, their Twitter in chief kind of puts a damper on things.
Absolutely.
If people paid attention to any of the coverage that happened during that time, you saw that Trump had a presser. Want to say it was Saturday morning.
Right? I think it was Sunday morning.
Okay, well, I
could be wrong too.
During his presser, he gave about what happened. I'll be honest, I know I'm biased, but not nearly the quality of statement that Obama gave whenever we got Bin Laden, but still a brief statement. And if he would have ended it there, everybody on the planet would have looked at this presser and said, oh, what do you know? Good job. And there would have been good vibes all around, and people would have been happy, and there wouldn't have been any negatives. And even the diehard Democrats who thinks that this guy can't do it, he doesn't even breathe correctly, would have been forced to say, you know, good job. You know, it's about time. You know, finally, we did something right. Unfortunately, he didn't let that happen. And he went on for another 45 minutes to an hour about how this was bigger than getting Bin Laden, and how, you know, I think he said something along the lines of the previous president couldn't get this guy. You know, he just didn't, he made it sound like he didn't have it in him. I'm not even sure this guy was even a player in the game whenever we got Bin Laden. But in any case, basically he compared all of this to the Obama thing, and why this guy continues to have a hard on for President Obama, really, I can't figure out. But whenever he was talking about this, and whenever he was doing his presser, and it's something that I really wanted to talk to you about, Frank, he described al-Baghdadi as whimpering and crying shortly before detonating his suicide vest in a tunnel as the U.S. commandos were closing in. He went on to say that al-Baghdadi spent his last moments in utter fear and total panic and dread, terrified of the American forces bearing down on him, and he died like a dog. Before getting into the technicalities about how the fuck he would even know any of this happened, because it was in a tunnel someplace, you know, and I promise you there wasn't any of the commandos that came running back to the president and said, hey, guess what? He died like a dog. He was crying and everything. I promise you none of those guys did that. Later, CNN reports that these claims that he made about the ISIS leader whimpered in final moments. None of the top officials know exactly where he got that. They have no idea where that came from. I'm going to take a shot in the dark here and just color me stupid. I'm going to sit here and say he made the whole fucking thing up. But here's my problem with this, Frank. I spent a good part of my life, and I've made a name for myself basically dealing and instructing in violence and its repercussions. And the repercussions of not only violence, not only physical violence, but verbal violence. And I spent a great deal of my time instructing, talking about de-escalation tactics. Okay. Here's my question to you, since, you know, I definitely want your input. If you hate me so much that you're willing to die, because let's face it, terrorists, people who are in ISIS and all that, they are willing to die for their cause. They don't half-ass it. They're willing to die for their cause. This guy, you had a suicide vest on, for God's sake. If you hate me that much that you're willing to sacrifice your own life to take out me and maybe a couple others, hearing the person who is the leader of my country or the leader of my kind, quote-unquote kind, talking about your leader whimpering and crying and dying like a dog, do you think that's a deterrent or do you think that's an incentive?
Yeah, I mean, I think that culturally, and I'm going to say, I'm going to take it, you know, out on a, basically a more than an assumption, but I'm going to say that culturally, with the culture that we're fighting against, which is a culture of terrorism, that it probably just incites them to continue to want to retaliate and to continue to want to exact revenge, because that seems to be what that particular group of that culture that we're fighting is, that they thrive on that. it's, you know, it's somewhat known in the culture, the warring culture of the Middle East, that you know, revenge is something that is important to them. At least, you know, when you're talking about the warring factions, that they hold on to grudges, and they will plot for years. They'll hatch a plot or intend to get their revenge, and it may in their minds sufficient to get that revenge decades later, and in a way that has a much more grand effect than the one that they're getting their revenge for. So let's take, for example, 9/11. You know, that their thought was, we're going to get revenge on America and the West for the times that they've killed innocent people in our country for oil or for riches or for whatever reason. They thought that we were there to harm their people on their land. So what they did was they had this spectacular plan. And I don't mean spectacular in the sense of, you know, wonderful. I mean spectacular in the sense of the effect. Mm-hmm. That they would have explosions, they would have mass casualties, and it would all happen at once, and it would be all televised, and it would happen in front of our faces to bring fear to us. So if you're dealing with a culture that does things like that, then I think that the words that he used are only going to incite them to want to exact revenge in a spectacular fashion. If you're dealing with a different culture, maybe that kind of effect would have, maybe that those words would have an effect that he thinks he probably wants to have, which is to then strike fear into the opponent's heart. But that's not the culture we're dealing with. We're dealing with a culture that, as I've said, and I think as you've alluded to question, that that this will not deter them. It'll only incite them.
Yeah, I definitely believe it's going to incite them. You know, I know families, Frank, in this, you know, corner of the world that you and I grow up in, who hate each other and hated each other for generations, and no one can tell you why they do. They just do, right?
Yep.
So this whole idea that you're going to talk like a big man and you're going to talk like you're something special, which should be a clue right there, right? Because people who are normally don't talk that way. Only makes things worse. You know, I go back to Obama's whenever we got bin Laden, and it was almost a somber tone with him, right? And it wasn't like he was disappointed that we got bin Laden. God, he, the biggest, you know, terrorist attack that's the world has ever seen, right? I mean, he forever changed the world. Yeah. And Obama was very contrite. He was very humble. He was very subdued, right? Because he did everything he could now to start tamping things down and not to excite the other side. Because I just beat the hell out of you. I don't want you getting up and coming back stronger, right? I don't want that. I got you. Now I'm going to do everything I can to keep you down to get over with, because if I give incentive, you know how it is. It's always worse the second time, and then even worse the third time. Now, it's a very, very dangerous game he played. And again, to me, it's just another way to show that he's just not. He just doesn't have the ability to serve in that office. He just doesn't have it in him to do it.
He doesn't. And just going back for 1 second to what you said, it sparked something in my memory. I was half tempted on Saturday night when the news came out. I think it was Saturday night that when the news came out, he tweeted something very big just happened. And there was like trickle of news coming out saying that we had gotten the ISIS leader. And you notice I didn't say his name because I can't say it as well as you did. But anyway, I was tempted to say, mark this tweet. Here's what you're going to hear from Trump tomorrow. I got a guy that's much bigger than Osama bin Laden. I did better than what Obama could do, you know, because that's what his measuring stick is. As you said, he's got a hard on for Obama, and he wants to prove that he's better than Obama. And, you know, I'm sorry that I didn't tweet that. And I'm sorry that I'm saying it and it sounds like hindsight. But I was so tempted to say pin that tweet to my Twitter account because it was so predictable that he would say that he would just, you know. But who outside of the military and who outside of people who pay very close attention to the Middle East goings on knew that name? I mean, I bet you if you polled America generally across the country, 70%, you just put the name in front of them. I bet you right now, even today, 70% of people won't recognize it. If you just say, what the significance of this person is, and just put the name in front of them, 70% of Americans won't know who that is.
Not a clue.
But yet he's going to tell you that he's bigger and more important than Osama bin Laden, who, as you said, conducted the biggest terrorist attack on America. Be that as it may, I'm very pleased with our military's ability to snuff him out, to find him, to eliminate him as a threat, because he is a threat. He was a threat. And mm-hmm. and it's great that our military did that. We're not taking anything away from that, you and I. We're talking about the response of the president and how he's broken with political norms. He's broken with tradition. He's done nothing to benefit the office of the presidency or our flag or our people. He wants to make it about himself and act like he's the tough guy in the room when he was the furthest from the tough guy.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is the fact that they were able to pull this off basically in spite of him.
Right.
Makes it even bigger. But the whole idea that no one even heard what did he say? No one even heard bin Laden. You know, right. Come on. We knew whenever Clinton was president, the first time he attacked the World Trade Towers.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, come on. This guy's so full of shit. No wonder his eyes are brown.
That's right.
Speaking of being full of shit, this impeachment thing that he's trying to bullshit his way through. This last couple of days, we had a testimony from one Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman. Why is that name important? Because he happened to be listening in on the call, because that's his job. He was an intelligence guy. He was listening in on the call that Trump had with Ukraine President Zelensky, where they decided there's no quid pro quo on this, all this shit, right? We remember that we've been talking about this thing for 3 fucking weeks now. What was significant about that is that Vindman testified that Trump or somebody Trump appointed, more likely somebody Trump appointed, doctored the transcript of the July phone call between Trump and the Ukrainian president. According to Vindman, Trump mentioned tapes of Joe Biden and said there's are places in the transcript where these things were either dodged, altered, or just, you know, not recorded at all. If you go back and you look at that transcript and you actually read it, there's no way that was a conversation that lasted as long as it did. Right. That was
right. There was 30 something minutes. And it took if you read it very slowly, it took I think there was 20 something minutes missing from the conversation. If you read it very slowly, the way they transcribed it, you're missing like 20 something minutes of the conversation.
Yeah, at best. If you read, and this is going to sound like a dig, and it kind of is, but there's a whole ton of truth to this. If you read at the level that Trump's capable of reading at, you're still at best 20, 25 minutes short.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. In order to defend this, we had a whole bunch of Republicans, and this goes back to what, you know, you and I have said for God knows how long, that Republicans will always put their party ahead of their country. Pretty much questioning the patriotism of, you know, this
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman.
who, by the way, walked into Congress in full uniform with all his ribbons and badges, and one of those badges just happened to include a Purple Heart.
Right.
Right? I mean, that was just on full display for everybody to see. And you know me, Frank. I'm not one to flaunt a whole lot of things. You see my uniform. You don't even know what rank I am other than I have to wear a black belt. But if I had one of those, holy shit, I'd be handing out pictures as I walk through a crowd.
Yep.
I had a hard time wrapping my head around the reception that he got from a whole lot of Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, let's just talk in generalities, okay? You've already pointed out who this man is. I mean, he was willing to sacrifice his physical well-being for our country to the point that
I don't mean to interrupt you, but if you saw the video of him walking into Congress, he actually set off alarms going through the metal detectors because he still has shrapnel in his body.
So there you go. He was willing to put his body on the line, his life on the line, and not just, you know, emptily saying that it took a toll on him. It took a real, real toll on him. So he's willing to do that for our country, for our flag, for all the things that we, you know, supposedly stand for, that the Republicans supposedly stand for, that, you know, are important to them, that they preach to everybody about how patriotism and the flag and blah, blah, blah. And that, you know, if you should happen to kneel during the national anthem, then God forbid, we're going to fire your ass from the NFL. You know, all that stuff, right? That's who the Republicans try to claim they are until it's not convenient for them to be that, right? So then they're going to go attack this guy who did put his life on the line because it's not convenient for them that he's coming in to take down their madman king, that he's coming in to tell them, no, your madman king didn't actually say it that way. He's left a lot of the stuff out that he said. And I need to inform you because I am a patriot and because you should be patriots. But instead, it's not good for them to be pro-military right now. In fact, you know what, Patsy, let's pull the scab all the way off. It's never good for them to be pro-military. They only want to be pro-military when it's one of two things. When it means that they're going to keep the oil that they want to keep flowing, and they want to keep control of the oil that they want to keep flowing. And two, when they want to keep defense contracts, which is money, flowing into their congressional districts. So in other words, they'll go have a parade, they'll go wave the flag, they'll go tell you they're pro-military because they want to have the contracted money come into their district. Like whether it's Fort Campbell, Kentucky for Mitch McConnell, or whether it's Paris Island in South Carolina for Senator Lindsey Graham, you know, or whatever it is, they got money coming in. They got big time money coming in because of that. They could give two shits less about the actual human being that's serving in that uniform. What they care about is the money and the oil. That's it.
Yeah, and if I have to generically kiss a little bit of ass to keep it coming, then so be it. That's what I'll do.
Yep.
Yeah, they're unbelievable. In his defense, and I mean that quite literally as I said it, Trump decided to cast Vindman as a, quote, never Trumper, despite also claiming that he never met the man. So I don't know how the fuck that happened. Right. He repeatedly pushed that a deep state of entrenched bureaucrats is out to get him. I'm reading from CNN. On cue, pundits who defend Trump's responsiveness to the whims of Vladimir Putin immediately questioned Vindman, who sought refuge in the U.S. as a very young child, and along with many other Jews, fleeing. And this is important: the Soviet Union. So it wasn't even fucking this trailer park that Russia is. This was the motherfucking Soviet Union, and they questioned where his loyalties lie. Right? How these people need to be taken out and shot. Vindman made it clear on Tuesday, which is, you know, yesterday, while the whistleblower and the anonymous Trump's Times op-ed writer are keeping their identities hidden, Vindman, still a White House employee, showed up to testify in person. This dude's badass, right? The vile attacks on his patriotism, though, were dismissed by a few Republicans, not too many, but a few of them, which really bothers me, because you would think it would be the other way around, right? You're going to get a couple of people going to do this, but the majority are going to say, "Hey, look, you don't do this to somebody who has served and has done what he did and what he's still doing." I wonder what these clowns are going to do, because now you have this Catherine Croft and Christopher Anderson, two State Department officials. They were scheduled to appear today. I don't know if they actually did or not. I didn't read where they didn't, but I don't know what time they were supposed to. So they may not even be showing up until like right now or sometime, you know, later today. They did submit opening statements. They're up on the USA Today. I didn't have a chance to read them. So they, as far as I know, they definitely are planning on showing up. So you have Vindman, you have this Catherine Croft, you have this Christopher Anderson, and like I said, I don't know these people from Adam, and you know, we do kind of keep track of this. You know, we are kind of on top about on this, but they are two State Department officials with expertise on the Ukraine. I'm sorry, on Ukraine. You're not supposed to say the Ukraine. They both worked under previous key witness. Oh, okay, they both worked under previous key witness Kurt Volker, the former U.S. Special Envoy to Ukraine. So they're scheduled to appear before both the House Oversight, I'm sorry, three of them, the House Oversight, Intelligence, and Foreign Affairs Committees. Holy shit, they're going to be busy. This isn't looking good for our Twitter in chief. Would you agree?
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think that the more details that come out, it's going to be harder and harder to provide them. And you know, the Republicans are going to continue to do it till the last breath that they are able to take, figuratively, in terms of, you know, how long can we keep this guy on life support and keep pushing our agenda until maybe we get a lucky break somehow. And I thought maybe their lucky break would have come with the killing of the ISIS leader, but then he ruined that, as we talked about. He ruined any of his goodwill by spouting off the way he did. And, you know, even Republicans were concerned about that, the way he spouted off. So, you know, he's kind of ruining any chance that he has to salvage anything out of this. And now he's trying to give pep talks to his people. I heard this morning on the news where, you know, he said, oh, the Republicans are in lockstep with trying to defeat this impeachment inquiry. But they need to become more offensive on the offense in terms of defending me on the facts as opposed to just the process, because he knows what's going on out there, which is that the only defense that the Republicans have been offering up is a defense on the process, because that's all they've got. You know, right. They can't defend on the facts. So he's giving them no opportunity to protect him by his actions and his words. And the very things that Trumpers loved about Trump, the fact that he breaks with norms, that he's outside the box, that he's not afraid to speak his mind, that, you know, he's going to tear down he's going to drain the swamp and tear down all these old institutions. Those very facts are the things that are going to come back to haunt him, you know, because the fact of the matter is, you know, we saw a spontaneous reaction of a crowd that was not a MAGA crowd. They were all wearing red hats and they were all out in public and they were at a sporting event. And Trump showed up at the sporting event, and it was the World Series, one of the most American iconic things you can have in the United States of America is a World Series baseball game.
Yep,
in the nation's capital.
Yep, it's as American as that.
That's right. And at that event, they announced the Wounded Warriors, as they often do. They respect the military in the seventh inning, and sometimes they sing "God Bless America." I don't know if they did that day, but what I do know is the fans were cheering the Wounded Warriors. However, then they flashed to the president and his wife and the other Republican cronies that were in attendance, and they announced them on the PA system. And as soon as they heard that and saw that on the screen, the crowd turned and started to boo. And they booed vociferously. And it really hit Trump. You could see his face drop when he recognized that they were booing him. and it hit Melania. You could see her face drop as she recognized her husband was being booed. But the party line the next day was Fox News erased the sound of the booing, edited it out when they showed the clip of Trump at the game, at the Nationals game. And they tried to gloss over the idea that he was booed. The party line was that he wasn't booed, that he was cheered. Well, there's a problem with that. One is he acknowledged it, and other folks who are trying to defend Trump acknowledged it, because these mainstream folks who are used to norms and our society being respectful of the office of president don't like to see our president get booed. Well, that was the old times. Listen, he smacked those norms and traditions out of the way, and now we've got a spontaneous reaction of the public. The will of the people said, we are going to boo this madman king. We're going to let him know that we're upset with him. So, you know, it shouldn't be stifled. Also, you had the president's son, Don Jr., tweet out in response to somebody saying that the father, Trump, the president, was not a good father because he didn't bring his son, Barron, who's a 13-year-old boy, to the World Series game. Here's a guy who's the president of the United States in his now home city, Washington, D.C., with his son who lives in that home city, goes to school in that home city, could have taken his son, Barron, to the World Series game. He didn't take him. That shows you what kind of father he is. He took Matt Getz instead, right? Didn't even take his adult sons. He took Matt Getz.
So he was attacked on Twitter for this.
And then Don Jr. says, I call that good parenting, because he knew that the liberal elites and the scumbag lobbyists would act in the way that they did. So here's Trump Jr. acknowledging that he got booed. But somehow he's saying his father was prescient in the idea not to bring his youngest son, because he knew that he would get that reaction. Well, that flies in the face of saying that he didn't get booed. And it didn't make no sense.
Are you saying that these guys act, you know, kind of skirt the fast and loose with the truth? That's, you know, Frank, I look at the some of the stuff that you deal with in your profession, right? And I would be very naive to think that you don't deal with things like this quite often. Let's just say you deal with these things far more often than I do. And you can see this coming a mile away. And I often wonder how you do it. How you just don't lose your shit sometimes. Because it would be very difficult for me to deal with this stuff. It's one thing to see it on Twitter and it pisses you off. It's another thing whenever you have somebody, you know, sitting in a room with you doing this shit, and you just know where this is coming from, and you've seen this 100 times before, and you don't just lose your mind sometimes. Just that's a credit. That's all I will tell you. That is a true credit to your character.
It's tempting to want to jump down their throats, but you have to let them hang themselves sometimes, and that's where the art of it comes in for sure.
Yeah, yeah, that's no lie. That's no lie. That's a gift. Whenever you have this dynamic, and it goes back to what we were saying earlier about his character, right? Not, I mean earlier during this part. I mean earlier like this year. And you always hear me talk about character, right? His character. He doesn't have the character to do these things. He doesn't have the character to do this. He doesn't have the character to do this, that, or the other thing, right? You sit there and you look at this, and his child son, the kid, he doesn't give the time of day to him, bringing him to a World Series game. But Matt Getz, who made the biggest ass of himself that he could possibly make, and that's with the likes of Jim Jordan in the same fucking room, and he trumped his assholery, trumped Jim Jordan's, right? So this is epic. He goes to the game. He brings him to the game. When are these folks going to learn that you're only good to Trump as long as he can use you? As long as you are a value tool. And as soon as you're not, you're out on your ass. I don't get it.
You would think they'd know by now, but for some reason, the allure of the power at the moment overtakes them.
But didn't his attorney, didn't Cohen warn them? I mean, he sat in Congress and warned them. You know, this is going to happen to you. He told them this.
Yep.
What happened to me is going to happen to you. Did these folks think, you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of every guy who ever got caught cheating on his wife. Right? For some reason, he thinks he's the special one. He's that one guy that's not going to get caught. Right?
Yep.
These clowns, they're the one person. You know, this Getz is the one person out of all the people in the last 70 years that this guy's fucked over. He's the one person who's not, it's not going to happen. What right. a fucking.
And they also think that somehow they're immune from them, from it happening to them too. So in other words, you know, karma's not going to come back to get them, you know, whether they're in the same relationship or another relationship, eventually karma's going to get you.
Right. You know, we call it the law, right? We call it the law of averages, right? Yeah. As a martial artist, I tell my folks, and you'll hear me say it if you haven't already, the universe always looks for balance. There's always balance in the universe. And sooner or later, what our parents always told us, right? What goes around comes around. Eventually, this shit evens out. Life's a zero-sum game. Eventually, you are going to get what you're given. I don't get it, Frank. I just don't understand. Last thing I wanted to talk about real quick, which I thought was a bit, I don't know if it's a little bit grandstanding or what, you remember Bill Taylor, right? The top U.S. diplomat in Ukraine. He came out today, well, CNN reported today that he is willing to return to Capitol to testify publicly. This is coming from a source familiar with the whole thing, with his thinking, they are saying, but come on, you know. Tomorrow, on Thursday, Congress is due to vote on. They're not actually voting for impeachment. They're voting. Is it more of a symbolic vote? Maybe I should have started there. So maybe I kind of jumped the gun a little. But this vote that they're having Thursday, that's just kind of to put everybody on record that this is definitely the direction we're going. Am I right in saying that, or am I?
Well, I'm not, I apologize. I didn't read in detail enough to really answer the question, but my recollection of the reading is that this is actually to vote to start the impeachment process. That right now we're in the impeachment inquiry, quote unquote impeachment inquiry, which you've talked about before, and we talked about in the sense of it's fact gathering, it's investigation, it's questioning witnesses, which is perfectly legal to do in the way that they've done. But I believe what they're doing now is they're going to move to formal impeachment.
I'm continuing to read. The House on Thursday will vote on a resolution that will formalize the rules for the impeachment and set the stage for public hearings
right.
in the House Intelligence Committee. Okay, so now you can start having cross-examination, right? Because now they'll be in public, and both the Democrats and the Republicans can put on their 5 minutes.
But I heard that Schiff is proposing. A rule that would allow questioning to go on to up to 45 minutes, and that it would only be done by himself and Nunes. That he's only gonna allow one person to speak on behalf of each side.
The two ranking members then.
Right.
Oh yeah, I'll tell you what, I would love for it just to be him and Nunes.
Well, absolutely. I mean, yeah, let's put our best up against your what you think is your best, and we'll see what happens.
Let's see how this works out. Boy, I hope that goes through. Schiff is smart as hell. Boy, I'm telling you, that guy's bright. Anyhow, that being said, we now have Bill Taylor, who has stated publicly, or at least those close to him have stated, that he is willing to come forward and testify publicly. I wonder if they're using that statement and whatnot just to start putting some pressure on people and to start. I'm not sure exactly which people they're trying to pressure, but it's obvious they're trying to do something to goose somebody, to jumpstart something or somebody, or just to get them worried or get them going. Because really, right now, it doesn't matter. If this, whenever this thing goes public, you're either going to come and testify or we're going to subpoena you. But he came out and said it, or at least, you know, somebody representing him said that he would be. Do you think that's significant, or do you think that's just kind of, you know, just kind of grandstanding a little bit?
No, I think it's significant. I think it is what you say it is, in the sense of sending a signal. I think it's a response to a few things. One is the Republicans saying that all these things have been done in, you know, closed door sessions. The public doesn't get to see it. So, okay, well, we're going to show everybody that it's what's going on, because it's really going to be damning to the president and to anybody that ends up supporting him. So I think it's significant in that way. And I think it's also significant in the sense of they didn't have to do this right now. So what that tells me is they feel comfortable with the statements they've gotten so far. They feel really, really good, because if they wanted to gather more evidence, they could have kept doing it the way they're doing it, right? But what they want to do is they have enough now that they feel like if they start going public, it's really going to put a lot of pressure on anybody that tries to provide cover for President Trump.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. Whenever I saw that, I said, they're feeling mighty confident. And if you watched how Pelosi's been doing things that are that far out there, that quote unquote confident, is not her style. She's very passive about a lot of these things. You know, whenever it comes to formally doing everything, how she's constantly saying she doesn't want to do this, she doesn't want this to happen, yada yada yada. Now, of course, a lot of that is politicking, and you get that, but Nana's pretty cut and dry. If she doesn't really want to do it, she'll tell you she doesn't really want to do it. And for them to be taking the stand and saying, "Oh hell, I'm willing to go do this shit," that's telling me a whole lot. That really is. That's telling me a whole lot.
I agree. We've talked about Pelosi's approach for a long time, and you're right to point that out. That this is going in this direction now. It really sends a signal, and I think it's the signal that we think it is. I just think that, you know, you asked a question probably 15 minutes ago or so. How do I think this fares for Trump when you see things like these people coming forth to testify and the testimony they're given? I really think he's screwed. And I think that eventually there's going to be a break. You know, there'll be a dam that breaks. You see these little cracks here and there when Republicans occasionally will say, you know, I think the impeachment should, there's enough reason for at least to question impeachment. And then the Republican Party tries to smack them down and say, you know, what are you talking about? And then they come out and apologize the next day. And then, you know, you have the Justin Amashes of the world who said, you know, that Trump committed impeachable offenses. And then they basically ran him out of the Republican Party. And he said, I don't care, I'm going to be an independent anyway. So, right. You know,
right.
You've got these cracks, and they're going to keep, you know, the cracks will keep getting bigger. And as things come out more and more public, and the public gets to see and hear these things, it's going to be very, very difficult for the Republicans to continue to provide cover for Trump, especially when he does what he does, which is to shoot his mouth off without thinking about the effect. He will attack his own party, which he's done. He will attack, just like, you know, his attorney said he would. He'll turn on his own people. He's had a history of that from the time he was in business till now. You know, he turned on Mattis. I mean, I don't think we covered it. You know, Jim Mattis came out and said a couple weeks ago that, you know, he compared himself what's her name? The actress. Oh, Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep,
said,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He said, you know, Trump went after Meryl Streep, and he went after me in the same way. He goes, I guess, you know, I don't mind being in the same company of her. She's a pretty good actress, maybe the best ever, right? He says, if I'm the Meryl Streep of generals, then I'm doing pretty good. So, you know, again, another example of Trump and the Republicans going after the military and even the people that served in his own administration. So the point is that I'm trying to get at with that long-winded response is he turns against his own people so much that eventually they're going to stop covering for him, because there won't be enough people left to hold up the dam.
I certainly hope so, because I look at everything, you know, things going on around me. It's like, if you're doing this to so-and-so, when are you going to start doing this shit to me? Right. You know, well, Frank, I think that's a good place to stop. As always, you were fantastic. Is there anything you want to say before we stick a fork in this thing?
You know, we've been saying to people all along, you know, stay on your guard, stay aware. I'd say the same thing now because, you know, Trump is a wounded animal and he's going to continue to do things that might jeopardize our country. And I think I'm a little disappointed in our country in the sense of not standing up yet. But I still have faith that people will stand up when the time comes to do that. It may take for us to come to, you know, protest in the streets in Washington, D.C. and other places to show these people that are in power, that have been elected to positions of power, that we as people don't stand for this. The Nationals game, when people spontaneously booed while wearing red hats, was a great symbolic thing to see. And I think that we need to, as a public, really display our displeasure with the way things have gone so that the message is sent. You see it around the world. You see it in Chile. You see it in Hong Kong. You see it, you know, in Puerto Rico. And it's a shift in power when those types of things happen. And we need to start doing that more here. But even if it just means making a phone call, but making your voice heard about when you're displeased with the way things are, let your representatives know that you're displeased with this, because it will make a difference eventually. So keep your eye on the prize here. One last little thing that's unrelated to politics. I guess a decent day for Napoli. I was up and I was down and I was up and I was down, and it ended up being a tie with Atalanta. Atalanta scored 7 their last game out. They only scored 2 against Napoli. Napoli was able to generate 2 goals too. So not too bad. I mean, I wish they could have picked up the 3 points. And at this moment, this very moment right now, Man United is leading Chelsea 1-0. So I guess go Reds, you know, in honor of you.
Yes, yes, they are. And did you notice who's on top of the city as we speak?
Is it Inter?
That'd be Inter Milan, yes.
Because they won against Brescia yesterday, right?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah, I'm excited. Like I said, I got to get it in while I can. By the way, Lionel Messi is not human. But to go back to your point, I agree with you about Trump. You have a spoiled rich boy who doesn't know what it's like to face adversity, and he's going to get a whole lot worse. His behavior is going to get a whole lot worse because he does not know how to handle adversity. Okay, Frank, awesome as always. So I thank you, and to everybody listening, like we say every pod, your time is very valuable. And the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us means a great deal to us. It truly does. So until next week, for Frank and myself, next week, same bad time, same bad channel. If you don't know what that means, you're far too young to be listening to this podcast. So thank you. And until then, goodbye, good luck, and God bless.
Butchered Sports. Raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to Holy Shit with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Join us again next week when we discuss the next thing that made us say, holy shit.